Good evening to you. I am Grant Stensili. You're into the program, the Better Health Radio Show. And this evening, live and direct, is the good doctor, Dr. Renee Boyce. She was not here with us physically last two weekends, but she's here today. And we're going to welcome her by saying good evening to Dr. Boyce. Good evening, Doc.
Hi.
Yes.
Yes, the technology.
Here is summoning you. Yes. Go ahead, my dear.
Yes, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, where we help you to live your best life. It is true, guys, and I wasn't here for the past two weekends, and I really did miss doing the show, but some other obligations had to take precedence.
So. We understand.
Yes. This evening is going to be, as I normally say, a very exciting and interesting show. But I was set some homework. I think the last time we were in studio together, a gentleman had called in about a rare medical condition. Mm-hmm. So we'll get that out of the way. I did do some research, and it's called congenital insensitivity to pain. He had spoken about some persons who don't possess the ability to feel pain, and it's a genetic disorder, meaning that they're born with it. The problem is in their genes. So such persons can distinguish between hot and cold, but they cannot feel that the heat is burning them. So these persons end up with many bruises and broken bones and so on, and they have no idea that they have injured a part of them. And they usually have a lower life expectancy until they're diagnosed, and then they know to be a little more careful. Very rare.
I'm just wondering if it affects the heart, that pain, not feeling pain.
And on that note, let's welcome our guest this evening. We have the Gittins family, or some parts of the Gittins family. We have David Gittins. He's the one who is our subject, and we have his parents, Wendy Ward Gittins and David Gittins. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Right. I came across David at the Caribbean. Well, I didn't come across him. I came across an article on him in the Nation newspaper at the Caribbean Dyslexia Center. They're located in Haggett Hall, St. Michael. And I thought it was a very inspirational article. And I'm also very passionate about those children who are labeled as slow learners and stupid. And all those different things, and there many of them are mislabeled. One of the causes for this mislabeling is that there are learning disabilities which go unrecognized. So we are going to journey back and forwards with David and his family. Now, I've said on the program before that there are two histories that are very long. And in medicine, when we talk about history, it's the series of questions that we ask patients about what happened before they ended up seeing us. The two that are extremely long are the pediatric history and the psychiatric history. They're long, very long. So we're going to start with you, Wendy. Again, thank you for being here. I want to ask you, were there any problems during your pregnancy with David? Any warning signs that that something might have been going wrong?
No, not at all. I went through, the very good pregnancy. I had no morning sicknesses. Everything, I worked right up to the week before delivery. Everything was good.
And there was nothing in your history, like medications that you were taking or any exposure to x-rays or anything like that at all in your pregnancy?
Well, I am a dentist, and being a dentist, I do have to take x-rays on a regular basis, but I had things put in place where I was sheltered from any scatter, even though in my field, there isn't very much scatter from our x-ray machine. I was not on any medications. I had, almost perfect health. So the pregnancy went very well, very well. No problems, nothing.
Okay, and one of the things that can happen sometimes is that there maybe some difficulties during delivery. And we're laying the foundation here because you're going to see where we're going with this. Those who are listening are wondering why I am all in Mrs. Gittins' business. But there's a reason for it. So how about delivery? Were there any challenges at delivery? Was it an urgent delivery? Was it a normal delivery? No challenges there at all?
When I did go through about 19 hours of labor and during the actual delivery, it was noted that I could not do a vaginal delivery, so I had to get an emergency C-section.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so once David was born and he went down to the nursery, he was cleared and he was discharged with you at the appropriate time?
Yes.
All right, so let's jump to Mr. Gittins. David, you are the star of the show. We're going to get to you, but let's talk to Mr. Gittins. Hi, Mr. Gittins, how are you?
I am good.
Yes, thank you for being here on the show. During David's development, as he was growing and getting a little older, did you notice that there was anything different about him, anything that would have ticked off in your mind that he might have had a problem?
Well, David was our first child, so we were not learning about this. The only thing with David is initially we thought that he had hearing disabilities, but then we realized it's just that he was ignoring us.
Sorry.
Yeah, you would be talking to him, you would be calling his name, and he just would not pay you any attention, wouldn't look around. We would go behind him and clap hard or bang a pot or something, and the child just he wouldn't jump, he wouldn't look around, nothing. So we actually thought maybe he was deaf or something. So we were putting things in place to take him to get his hearing tested when
the Concorde flew over on it and it jumped him.
Yeah.
And we said a deaf child can't hear the Concorde. True. So at that time we lived in the flight path of the airport. And mm-hmm. That's when we realized that he wasn't deaf.
Yeah.
He was just ignoring you. Okay, well, children do that. So you have this normal little boy who's getting into trouble, who is climbing up on things. He's running through the house, bumps and bruises, yeah. All the normal things. And then yeah. He goes off to school. What were the first few years at school like for him, according to reports from his teachers?
He was okay. I don't think he had any real challenges at school in terms of playing and things. I don't think he had any real issue. It was fairly normal.
Yeah.
He seemed the average child.
Okay. They did comment that he spoke very well. We had the first form level meeting, let's call it that, when he was in class one. And that was when either class one or infants B, I can't remember which one, but that's when the teacher drew it to my attention that he never would read. He would never read. She would give them time to do whatever they wanted. The other children would pick up a book and read, but David, she told me, David would never, ever read. And that I found very disturbing.
Okay, you had mentioned when we had a chat that your family is a family of readers. So reading is something that's encouraged in your family. So once you yes. would have gotten this information from his teacher, what did you do with this information? Did you go and try to see if what she was saying was true, or what did you do after?
Yeah, when I got home, I said, David, your teacher told me that you don't ever read. Other children are reading and you're not reading, but we have all these books here, you know, we read to you. Come, sit down. Let's read this book, because I don't know what the teacher is talking about, but we're going to get to the bottom of this. And I sat down with an age-appropriate book, mm-hmm. and I told him, okay, let's start reading. And after about 30, 40 minutes, we were not past the first three lines of the book. we did not get past those first three lines. And at first I thought he was being naughty because he always loved to watch TV. He would watch movies from beginning to end and watch them over like three times in a row. So I figured that he just wanted to get back to the TV. So he wasn't interested in the book. He just wanted it over and done with so he can run back to the TV.
Okay, so we're going to jump to David now. I know that infants be a couple years ago. You're still young, but can you cast your mind back for us to infants B and class one and your years at primary school? Before you were diagnosed, did you think that you were different from the other children?
I didn't think necessarily I was different. I just knew there were things, a lot of things just didn't make sense to me that other children did well at. And I thought, you know, we all have our strengths. I might be good at one thing and other people are better at English and spelling. And that was their forte. I knew anytime we had any spelling class or particularly Spanish, when we had Spanish vocab, everyone knew what they were doing. And I would just be sitting down in the class and I would be completely confused. I had no clue what they were doing. And our teachers always were upset with me because I would just be sitting down there blank. I had nothing on my paper and they're just complaining that I won't do the work, but I have no clue what the other people are writing. I don't know what's going on in class, but when it came to math, I could do math. Math was fine, but English, Spanish, anything with writing, reading, that was beyond me.
And so let's jump back to your parents again, because we're going to ask you about your experiences in secondary school and then now that you're in university and how you're adapting to your challenges. And I haven't disclosed as yet. Well, I probably gave a hint at the beginning, but what did you do, Mrs. Gittens? What was your next step when you recognized your child had a serious challenge with reading? Because reading essentially is the foundation of everything that will happen in his life later on.
Well, it took a little while before we actually got a solution or before we could figure out what was going on. And it so happened that my husband, he was working in town at the time, and he would pass a lady standing by Kay Shepherd who would all ask for donations for certain charities. And one of the charities that she was asking the donation for was the Caribbean Dyslexic Center. And he gave her the donation and she gave him a pamphlet. He was standing in the line at in the bank and looking through the pamphlet. And the pamphlet was asking, does your child do this? Can your child do this? Does your child have a problem with that? And there were about, say, about 12 or 15 questions. And he could answer yes for about 11 out of those 15 questions. So he called me right away and said, listen, I just got a pamphlet about dyslexia, and the information on this pamphlet mirrors David. I said, really? So he brought the pamphlet for me and I started to try to figure out about this dyslexic center. I had a little trouble trying to find the dyslexic center because I was looking for Barbados Dyslexic Center, the Dyslexia Center, and I called someone at the ministry and they did some research for me, and eventually we found out it was the Caribbean Dyslexic Center. And I called them immediately. You had to go through certain procedures with them. You had to get an appointment where they would give the child an exam to do, or a little testing to do to find out the level of dyslexia. And when I called, I asked them, well, can I get the appointment tomorrow? And well, the next day, the lady laughed and she's like, no, we have to look for a time. I said, well, okay, well, if not tomorrow, what about the next day? You know, but eventually I did get the appointment and he got the testing and he was deemed to have dyslexia traits. And so they told us that we would have to bring him for classes. We could bring him for classes. And I was like, yeah, sure. When can we start? I want to start right away. So we got the soonest appointment and he began the lessons. So that between the teacher telling me that he wasn't reading and getting him an appointment with the Dyslexia Center and into lessons at the Dyslexia Center, I think that was about within a term.
Mm-hmm. So after he started going to lessons and getting treatment from the Caribbean Dyslexia Center, did you notice an improvement in his reading, in his grades?
A tremendous improvement. Within 3 months, I was like, what sort of sorcery are they doing up there? Because here it was, this child could not distinguish this, it was, he could spell it. You could ask him, spell this, and he would say THIS, but when he looked at the word, he could not call the word. He would call it all sorts of things. So, but then within like 3 months or 3-4 months, he went from not being able to get past the first three sentences of that book to reading, you know, with just a little help with a few words. And I was like, wow, I don't know what they did, but they certainly worked wonders.
So, David, we're back with you again. How old are you now?
21.
We're going to spend just a minute in primary school still. So now that you've started these classes and you realize that you can read, tell me how that felt, or tell us, the listeners, how that felt for you on the inside, moving from being clueless in class to being able to actually read.
Well, one of the things that I always remembered was that term right after the end of the term, after I started at the Dyslexic Center, my aunt picked me up from school and it was the day we got our report cards back. So when she picked me up, we opened it. And I don't know if my mom remembers, but I used to be like the fifth from the bottom of class every term. And when we opened this report card, I was eighth. And I'd never been so happy in my life.
Could imagine.
I was just used to being at the bottom of the class. And now I'm eighth. I'm like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was really happy. It was the first time I felt like I knew I can do something. I don't have to be clueless anymore, that I actually have a fighting chance in the class.
So if you, the listeners, have not guessed by now, we are talking about one of the learning disabilities, learning disorders. We're talking about dyslexia. And dyslexia is a condition where persons who suffer from the condition, they have an inability to decode or separate words into into different sections. They can't separate out words, and therefore they can't connect information in their heads so that they're able to spell words, to remember different words that they've seen, or try to sound out new words. So for example, in phonics, if I say M and A, that's ma. And if I say TH, then that's, well, you probably couldn't hear the TH sound, but we know what the TH sound is. But persons with dyslexia don't have the ability to put the ma and the TH together to call the word math. And they also have this inability to recognize words that they would have seen before. Because in the English language, there are some words that are sight words. For example, my, my, that's a sight word, because you can't go on phonics to pronounce the word my. So these children often get very frustrated. Their parents get very frustrated because you hear very often, but you don't just do that, or what you go to school and do? Or I pay money to buy uniforms for you on school books, and you going to school and you ain't doing none. It's a very challenging experience, especially if the child has not been diagnosed. And in families where there is not that reading support, as we've heard about in the Gittins family, it's even worse for those children. And one of the other things where we're lacking is that we're lacking specialist teachers in our schools who would be able to pick up on these things. What should be picked up upon, or things that should be noticed, would be a child who is struggling to do the basics. If ever there's a child in the class who's struggling to do basics, then the teacher and the other members of staff at the school should point out to the parent that this is what's happening. And on the other side of that coin, parents also need to be very involved in their children's learning so that they themselves see that there's something going wrong and they look for help. Mrs. Gittins, when she realized that something was wrong with David, she looked for help. And this is what we need to do as parents. So David, we're with you again. We've journeyed now and we are at class four. You said something just now that was very interesting. You had a fighting chance. What was your goal at Common Entrance?
My goal was just to get to Harrison College. My father went to Harrison College and I wanted to follow in his footsteps. So that was just the only thing. I was like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to write this exam, and I'm going to AAC. So when the results came back and I was second in the island, that was a big shock, because everyone in class was like, wait, Davi can second? Because Davi can read, Davi can write, and Davi can second? I was like, and I think that was a very good memory for me. It was a time that I knew I overcame a lot of challenges, and I had gotten 98 in English, and I don't know how because when we were in class four, we used to have spelling tests, and I always was probably the third lowest mark in spelling. My English was terrible. Well, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. I wasn't good at English. I put in the effort. I worked hard and I got the results. So I was very happy about that. And I know my parents were too.
I could only imagine how you would have felt achieving something as great as this. Let's go back to your parents now. Did you find that you had to try to encourage him and stop him from feeling as though he was less than? Any of those challenges?
No, not really. What I did do was, since I recognized that he had an issue with the English, I sought to get extra lessons for him. So he did go to lessons from class two, the end of class two, with Mrs. Thompson. Shout out to Mrs. Thompson. Okay. So I sought lessons for him, especially for the English. what I also, I would encourage him to use words that he could spell. So don't try to use a big word to impress somebody when you can use four little small words and get the same meaning, same idea coming over. Use small words that you can spell. You know you can spell them. Use those words so that you would not be getting too many errors in your essay.
So what I want to do now would be for our listeners just to list some of the signs of children who might have dyslexia. Remember that dyslexia is not the only learning disorder. But since we were discussing it, let me just list some of the symptoms and signs that you might see in your child. Before the child goes to school, your child may start talking later than other children of the same age group, and it takes them a while to learn new words, and they can't form the words correctly. And they tend to reverse sounds in the words, or they confuse words that sound alike, and things that you expect children to remember, like the alphabet and counting in order and nursery rhymes. Children with dyslexia tend to have challenges dealing with those things. And by the time the child gets to school, like we saw in David, unable to read for their grade level. So David wasn't reading as a child who would have been 7 or 8 at that time. And the children can process. They can't process the things that they hear. So comprehension is definitely a challenge for children with dyslexia. They can't remember sequence, and they can't see the subtle differences in words, and sometimes the glaring differences in words. And of course, like we heard from David, their spelling really is a challenge, and it takes a long time for these children to do their homework. And by the time they're a little older, again, we see those learning difficulties, those learning challenges being pronounced again. And they tend not to want to do any activity that involves reading and writing. They hide their homework. And the story about the dog ate my homework, well, if your child says that, but perhaps you should get him or her tested for dyslexia. And they can't, by the time you are a certain age in secondary school, we expect that you should understand proverbs, a stitch in time saves 9, or don't look before you leap. But children with dyslexia tend not to be able to understand proverbs and idioms and so on. So we see that having an undiagnosed learning disorder really can present a lot of trouble for our children, because what happens in these children, it didn't happen in David's case, but what happens in these children is that their self-esteem is lowered. Children have the ability to be very mean to each other. So a child who is having trouble at school learning, the other children can pick on them, call them dumpsy. Well, back in my day, they used to say dumpsy. I don't know what they say now, but that they're slow. And these children tend to become introverted and withdrawn, and they grow up like that in society, where they feel that they're not as good as their peers, where they can't achieve. And so these children tend to settle as adults for menial work, for things that wouldn't put in the spotlight that they have challenges with reading. And another thing that you see is aggression. So sometimes when you see children acting out at school, it's not that they're bad behaved per se, but it's because they're frustrated, they're not getting the work done, because they feel different. So these things really should be picked up on as early as possible. One last thing before we go back to David is that some of the mistakes that are made in dyslexia are mistakes that normal children make. For example, reversing the letter B and D. Smaller children do these things. So not every time you see a letter reversal or children mixing up letters, your child has dyslexia, especially the younger children. But what you should do is keep a close eye, and there never is anything wrong with going and asking a question. So back to you, David. You're in secondary school now, so your workload has gone from 5 subjects up to about 12, 13 subjects at Harrison College. How did you manage?
Sorry, just had the technology. So for first form, second form, and third form. I actually found the work quite easy. I didn't have any issues with math or science. Where the issues came, as you can guess, is English and languages, Spanish and French. And my grades would be 80s and 90s for math and science, would were those types of subjects. And for English literature, English lang, it would be 52, 53. Spanish would be 57, something around there. So I knew I wasn't Duncey. Because my other grades were fine. But I knew what my problem area was. So I knew what to address. And I knew what I should avoid. So when I was picking subjects, when you get into third form and you have to pick your subjects for full to go on to do CSCs, I know that I am going to pick subjects that I don't have to read or write very much. And so I picked the sciences, I picked math, and I picked accounting. And so for what I normally tell people is that to focus on your strengths. If you know you're good at math, if you're good at science, why try to bog yourself down with a subject you're going to have issues in? Do what you're confident in. Do what you know you can achieve, where you can do well in. And it doesn't mean that you forsake your weaknesses. You still try to work on them, but don't let them consume you. Don't let the fact that you're having issues in a particular subject be what defines you.
I think that is a wonderful piece of advice. Let's jump back to your parents again. We're doing this back and forth because we're trying to get the perspective of parents who have to manage a child who is suffering with a learning disability and the experience of that child, him or herself. This evening, we are in with the Gittins family, David, David, and Wendy Ward Gittins, and we're discussing dyslexia for those of you who are now joining us. A very interesting topic here on VOB 92.9 FM. Back to you, Wendy or David. Either of you can answer this question. When you found out that your child had dyslexia, was there any point in time when you thought that he would not have been able to do well academically or do well in generally? Did that thought ever cross your mind?
No. I felt so happy because Wendy and I used to say, look, we are both bright individuals. How can we have a stupid child? It didn't make sense that we couldn't spell two-letter words and things. When we found out, it was like, aha, we know what the problem is. No, just find the solution. Okay. So it was a lot of hope from the time we discovered that. Because we were really puzzled. I remember a time I was trying to give him stuff. I mean, I don't know what from the police or child care board is there, but I kept lashing the boy because I said, he has to be playing the fool. He cannot be this dumb. That means that he's deliberately playing the fool. He's giving trouble. But when they found out I had dyslexia, then they understood. It wasn't that he was playing the fool. He was doing his very best. But because how his brain is wired differently, what was being simple for another child his age, he just couldn't get done. Like, he has a sister who's 1 year younger than him. And when it came to things like spelling and things, she was much better than he was. And it did not make any sense to us. It was, if she can do this, why isn't David doing it? Why is he refusing to do this very simple task? But when we found out, that was our aha moment. It was, yes, we know what the problem is, just to find what's the solution for it.
Right, and this is definitely, sorry, you wanted to say something, Wendy?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with David.
Okay, and this is very instructive for parents. Two things came out here. One that we must always remember as parents, no two children or three or four are the same. Even a twin, they are separate and distinct individuals. And one of the things that we must never do as parents, and this is not apportioning blame to anybody, but general advice for parents is never to compare your children. They each have their own strengths and weaknesses. And the other thing is, what you are going through, David, is exactly what many parents go through. Because you can see that the child is intelligent. You can see that the conversations that come out of his mouth, the reasoning. Yes. And you still can't say the cat sat on the mat. No, you must just be playing the fool.
Exactly. That's how we felt.
And it's just the same thing in medicine, for example. A person who is ill, and this person cannot find out what the diagnosis was. I remember that there was a young lady who was going from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor. Couldn't find out what it was. I happened to be at a conference where they had discussed this particular diagnosis. And like you, I had an aha moment. Like, but this sounds like my patient. So I got back to work after the conference. I called her in. We ran the test, and lo and behold, it was exactly what she had. And her life changed right after that, because she understood why she was feeling the way she was feeling. She understood the things that she would have to put in place and those things she would have to remove in order to lead a normal, healthy life. And that's the same thing. When we understand what's wrong with the children who have learning disabilities, then we know what to put in place. We understand as parents, we have to be a little more patient with the children. And this is productive for teachers as well, that sometimes the child in your class who is acting out, or the child in your class who seems to be talking and distracting the others, is just looking for a way of escape from something that's too challenging for them. So any of those teachers out there who are looking for an area in which to specialize, think about specializing in recognition of learning disabilities in children, or managing learning disabilities, special education. Yeah, that would be a good field. So here we go with you again, David. Let's talk. Back in my day, it was called A-levels. I think it's, what's it called for y'all now? CSEC?
CAPE.
CAPE. Oh, yes, CAPE. I just dated myself. Let's talk about CAPE. Which subjects did you take at CAPE?
Accounts, pure math, physics. There's a third, the fourth one. It's Caribbean Studies, Communication Studies.
Okay, and in preparing for those exams, was there any pressure from yourself? Did you have a particular goal in mind?
To get a scholarship. That's okay. The end goal.
And did you honestly believe that you would get a Barbados scholarship, knowing that really and truly you had all this trouble with understanding questions and processing, your exams are time constrained?
No, I didn't doubt it. I was very confident I would get it. And in terms of time, for your CSAT and for your CAPE, you can apply to the CRC Council for extra time. The amount of time they give is too little, but it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do recall that once you had a diagnosis and a report from the Caribbean Dyslexia Center, or from a psychologist or other recognized professional, that you could apply for extra time. The same thing happens at common entrance level. You can, and any other major exam, you can apply for extra time. So let's let our listeners know how you did in your A-level exams.
All ones. I got the Barbados scholarship.
Yay!
So goal accomplished.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, congratulations. So results are back. Go back in your mind. How did you feel?
Well, I was just waiting for what I knew would happen. I knew I got it, so it just was a confirmation. So I was happy. By that time, I had gotten used to doing well in classes. And as I said before, I focused on my strengths. I took subjects that I didn't have to stress about. Math came naturally to me. There weren't that many words that I had to write in the math exam. I just had to worry about the numbers. By the time I was in third form, I had understood myself. So everyone learns differently. And that goes for normal people. And that goes for dyslexic children as well. So you have to figure out how you learn, how you specifically learn, how you take in information and adapt to suit for yourself. So I made sure that if a teacher is teaching a certain subject and I know the way they're teaching is not going to help me, I don't stress about that. When I get home, I can take up the textbook or go through the notes and formulate the notes in such a way that I can understand what's going on.
Or even just right there. I remember chatting with your mom and she told me a story about your sister trying to use your notes.
I don't recall. Yeah.
Let's ask your mom, Wendy.
Yes, hi.
What about Davi's sister trying to use his notes?
Yeah, well, as we said before, they're a year apart. And she did end up going to Harrison College as well. And her subjects were mirroring his for the first 3 or 4 years. So I would tell her, well, your brother did this subject before. He would have the notes. Why not use his books for notes? You know, don't reinvent the wheel. He went through it already. So she would be saying, oh, well, I can't use his books. I said, well, why can't you use his books? I mean, he went through it. He has the notes. So she said, Mommy, but you don't understand. I cannot understand what he's writing. I said, well, how you don't understand what he's writing? I said, bring the book. Let me see. She brought the book. And I was like, okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. I called David. I said, David, look at this. Read this sentence, read this paragraph here for me. And he could read it. He knew what it was. But when me, as a non-dyslexic person, looked at what he was writing, I could not understand it. And I can understand even if a sentence structure is not properly put together, I can still get the gist of what's going on, but I just could not understand what he had written. So I had to tell the sister, okay, all right, yeah, you're going to go offend for yourself.
Right for yourself, oh dear. There's actually a learning disorder. Maybe it can be a component of dyslexia called dysgraphia, where persons have the inability to write properly. They don't understand word spacing and sentence structure and context and all of those things. It's just not, I want to say normal, and I say it guardedly. It's just not what we perceive as normal. But and we had the evidence right here, to the mind of a person with dyslexia, well, this looks absolutely normal. How do you mean you all can't read this? Anybody could read it.
Yeah.
But in their minds, and it's actually a brain problem, the way the brain is wired. Studies were actually done on the brains of children, and they were carrying out particular activities at the time when the studies were going on. And they realized that the areas that were highlighted in the brain in a dyslexic child were not highlighted in the brain in a normal child, and normal only referring here to the spelling and those different things. So it really is a biological problem, a brain biological problem. So it's nothing that the children are doing to get away from work, or it's not that the children are being lazy. It is simply that they cannot get it done. So, David, you have won yourself a Barbados scholarship and you have decided which career path you're going to take. And what career path is that?
Actuarial science.
Clearly. Yes. It would have to be.
Yep.
Yeah,
it would be the only thing that made sense.
Correct. And for those of us who are not certain what such a person does, what branch of science is that?
So actuarial science is basically the management and of risk. So most actuaries work in insurance. So they're the ones that would look at the risk of taking on certain persons for life insurance or health insurance, pricing the insurance product so that the insurance company would be able to pay out claims when they occur and always have acceptable risk pool. Actuaries can also work in basically any business, because all business have risks. Risks in terms of this environmental risks, business risks. So the branch of actuarial science I would wish to go into is enterprise risk management, which would allow me to work in basically any area, any sector.
Have your lecturers and professors and so on at university, you are at Waterloo?
Yes, please.
Yes. Have they had any trouble understanding your work and so on and so forth?
No, I don't believe so. Numbers are pretty universal.
True, very true. Let's talk about something as simple as filling out forms, like immigration forms and forms to open a bank account and those things. Do you have challenges with things like that?
No. After a while, everything is just repetition. Writing your name, your phone number, everything just becomes repetition. It took me probably, I was 12 to learn over my parents' phone numbers. Took a long time. And I mean, I don't even know my sister's number offhand. I have to keep everything in my phone. But so what I did when I moved to Canada actually was they let you choose your phone number. So I just made my phone number to be like one digit different to my father's number. So I already learned his. So I made the easy way out for everything. No, don't work hard, work smart.
Understood. That does make sense. And like you said, you know where your weaknesses are. So you play up your strengths and focus on them and you manage your weaknesses as best as you can.
Yes.
So some of the risk factors for persons developing dyslexia would be to have other persons in the family who have learning disabilities, or you might find it in babies who were premature or had a low birth rate, or there was difficulty during delivery and there might have been a loss of some structural problems with the brain and so on that could predispose these children to having learning disabilities. Which is why in the pediatric history, it goes all the way back to pregnancy and delivery, because you're looking for something before that could probably be affecting the outcomes now. So again, when we were back in studio with Dr. John Barker, one of the things that we had emphasized was the importance of antenatal care. So again, we take this opportunity to remind those persons, once you discover that you are pregnant, for the safety of the child or children and your own safety, to book for antenatal care either at one of our island's polyclinics or at your private doctor or at your gynecologist's obstetrician. And as a result of having dyslexia, sometimes there are complications such as low self-esteem. We've mentioned this before. There would be trouble in school. Children are labeled as being difficult and being slow. And there is nothing like harsh words for a child. Believe it or not, there are things that are said to children that they take well into adulthood, and that informs their behavior, the choice of job, their pay grade, all of these things. So if you notice anything in your child, we really and truly are asking to take that next step. Do what the Gittins family did. Look for resources. Try to find out what the problem is, especially if the learning disorder is not making sense. And again, I go back to another show that we'd had when we spoke to Dr. Dolores Griffith. She's an ophthalmologist. And the poor child could not see. Could not see something as simple as a child not being able to see. And when we think about famous people, if we remember Ben Carson, gifted hands, the surgeon, he was almost legally blind, and that's why he was so slow in school. And once he had a pair of glasses and somebody that believed in him, look at where he is today. So we're talking to parents when we say, spend time with your children and their homework. Be present with your children, so that if there's anything that's different in them, any problems, you can pick up those problems. We are just a few minutes out of the end of our show, so we're going to go back to each of our guests and we're going to ask them to share what they would want you, the listeners, to remember about our subject today, dyslexia. But what I really do want to say is that sometimes other medical conditions can cause children to have learning disabilities, for example, children who have Down syndrome, children who might have hydrocephalus, which means excess fluid on the brain. So sometimes there are structural problems and birth problems that might have caused children to be slow learners. But in as much as a child is normal and you recognize that there is something that's not right, they're not reading to their age group, they're not doing well in school, they're acting out in class, try to find out what it is. A child should not be labeled as a slow learner or stupid unless he or she has completely had a hearing test, has had their vision checked, and has been screened for a learning disorder. So we will start with David's parents. What do you want parents to take home from our show today?
What I would want them to take home is, you should know your child better than anybody else. And you should always be that support for your child. Don't look for the teacher to be the one bringing your child along, because the teacher has 30 odd children in the classroom. So don't rely only on the teacher. Check and see what's going on in with your child. Get the ideas from the teacher, get the teacher's opinion as to what the teacher is seeing, and then you take that and work on it. Another thing we had done for David is during his whole secondary school life is that we made sure that he went to lessons for anything related to the that needed reading and writing. So English Lit, English Lang, the French, the Spanish, the communication studies, anything to do with reading and writing, we made sure that there was somebody else there to help him, right? We can do it ourselves because, you know, the work is different to when I was at school way eons ago. So I had to find someone who knew the work now. So we made sure we had put that in place for people to help him. So if you can, I mean, I know that there will be some people who would not be able to afford all the lessons, but there are some teachers who are really, really interested in the children who will be, who will do free lessons. You just have to make sure that you are respectful and approach the teachers. Go to the class level meetings. A lot of parents do not go. Go to the class level meetings. Talk to the teachers. See what the teachers are seeing, what they would recommend, you know, go to the PTA meetings, find out, get all the information is so important. Get the information and then look and see how best you can use that information to help your child. Help your child who will be the future of our generation, our generations to come.
Right. What does say that there's no problem, personal or otherwise, which God can't handle? No matter how hard it looks, no matter how lost you may be, never give up and never stop praying. I mean, we couldn't go through everything that happened in David's life, Snarly, but I mean, every challenge we prayed about, we tried, we never gave up, no matter how impossible it looked like. Nobody expected that David, a dyslexic child, could get a Barbie scholarship. That was impossible. But he wanted it, and we wanted it for him, and we went to God and we prayed and we never gave up, no matter his challenge. So what I would say is that Wendy just said that she went on a week's fast for his
prayer and fasting. Every time he had
to do
exams, a week of prayer and fasting, beseeching right. God to help him.
Right. There's nothing too hard for God to do. And just because we can't see the solution, it doesn't mean that God doesn't have one. So that is what I would say. Just never give up.
Okay, thank you both so much. And now we go to you, David. I want you to share with us very quickly the perspective from share what you would want parents to understand, and then just words of encouragement to a child who might have been in your position.
So for parents, I have met a couple parents whose children have been diagnosed with dyslexia. And you would think that dyslexia was an urban myth, or there's something scary. They refuse to call their child dyslexic. They don't want their children to be associated with the term. And it's a lot of ignorance to what dyslexia is, and a lot of fearfulness. Dyslexia doesn't mean your child is stupid or something is quote unquote wrong with your child. They're just different. And I don't see dyslexia as a curse. I see it as a gift. So on the neurological point, dyslexic persons use the right side of their brain much more than the left side. And the right side of the brain is in charge of creativity and out-of-the-box thinking. So dyslexic persons tend to be much more creative, artistic. All of the history of people being diagnosed with dyslexia, many famous, brilliant people have been dyslexic.
Thomas
Walt
Edson.
Disney, Thomas Edison,
Steven Spielberg,
Leonardo da Vinci, and most importantly, Albert Einstein,
yes.
Who's lauded as the most brilliant human to ever live. And if the most brilliant person to ever live was dyslexic, why are parents afraid to acknowledge or help their children that are dyslexic? There are parents who don't want to take their children to the dyslexic center because they think that stigma is going to be attached to them, that, oh, if I take my child to the dyslexic center, that means there's something seriously wrong with the child. The child isn't bright. The child isn't going to amount to something. And that isn't so. We need to wash away this ignorance that we have in not only the general society, but even in the educational sphere. There are a lot of teachers who do not understand what dyslexia is or don't understand how to deal with dyslexic children. And that's why we have a lot of issues with dyslexic children falling through the cracks. A few years ago, we had, I know I'm going a bit long, a few years ago, they did a study and they found that a large majority of the prisoners in Dodds were dyslexic boys who were not diagnosed early and who fell through the cracks in the education system. So just overall, we need conversations like this to keep occurring. And for people to not view it as a curse, but as a gift.
David, I really want to thank you so very much for being so honest and for sharing with us. We have come to the end of our show.
Before you end, let me interrupt you. Before you end, there's a WhatsApp here who's asking the question, how much does the test and classes for dyslexia cost?
Okay, the Caribbean Dyslexia Center, they're located in Hackett Hall. So give them a call and they would be able to tell you the cost of the specific test and what needs to be done.
All right, so WhatsApper, I hope you heard that piece of advice there. You can seek out the number for the Caribbean Dyslexia Center. That's the correct term, right? Mm-hmm. And then they can facilitate your questioning with regards to your cost of the test and any other follow-up to be done, the person you want to get tested. So at least now you have some information regarding how to go about that. You can try the Caribbean Dyslexia Center for the cost and the class, and that will follow as well. So that part you can undertake on your own. So, Doctor, carry on, please.
Yes, so in wrapping up, that's one thing that parents can do. They can go to the Caribbean Dyslexia Center, call for some information. You can also go through your school and to have your child assessed by the psychologists in the Ministry of Health. Of course, we know that there's a long list and so on, but don't give up. And just keep pressing into your child. It has been a pleasure being here with the Gittins family and, of course, being here with you, Gregston.
That goes without saying, my dear.
Of course, but, you know, it makes sense to say it. So until next week, Lord willing, same time, same place. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
A week of weekend. Yes, have a wonderful weekend. Right. Thank you for having us.
You are most welcome.
Okay. All right, there you go. The Gittins family, the special guest of the Good Doctor today on the Better Health Radio Show. That's Dr. Renee Boyce. She'll be back, God's willing, next weekend, Sunday at 6 o'clock for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. We thank you all for being part of it. This evening we discussed dyslexia. Next weekend, when a doctor lets me know, I will let you know, and then everybody will know what we will discuss then on the Better Health Radio Show.